This is a free download from Cork's new Red FM, the Big Red Bench podcast.
Right, we are going to talk Gaelic games, and Cork and Waterford will have to do it all over again after they finished level at 121 apiece today in Semple Stadium. Waterford led by 9 points at one stage in the second half, but a great Cork comeback showing their spirit, and Pat Horgan scoring the equalising point in the last minute. The replay will be on Saturday week in Semple Stadium. This is Jimmy Barry Murphy speaking afterwards.
We didn't get the grips with the game. We saw Waterford certainly took the game to us, and you know, when we were 9 points down, it certainly didn't look good at all, and it was very dubious whether we'd be able to come back from that. But I suppose the one positive to come from the game is that our great character in the team, we thought there was a big lead, but in fairness, our lads, they pegged it back. So from that point of view, that was the one big positive out of it.
The substitutions were good, didn't they, Bill Cooper?
Yeah, Bill was very good. He came in and all subs did well. I thought some of the lads who had their first game today did very well, equally well. So from that point of view, there was some positives, but overall, a lot of work to do.
Waterford looked to have a lot more intensity, Jimmy, in the first half. Did it take Cork time to kind of get the grips of the pace of the game?
Yeah, it's something like something similar to our league games, which I spoke about last week, that we didn't seem to be up the pace again like against Tipperary here. We were off the pace of the game. Waterford took the game to us, as I said, and we conceded quite a lot of scores and some very, very silly play on our behalf as well, I thought. You know, but credit to Waterford, they played very, very well in the day. They came in under pressure, obviously, with injuries and different things, but you'd have to say they took the game to us and were excellent on the day.
And in the first half, you ran the puck out. Your puck out seemed to, you know, lose a lot of possession from your own puck out.
Yeah, we did a lot of problem areas in the first half, in fairness, and we tried to address them as best we can, but as I say, well, credit to Waterford, they played well, and we've got a lot of work to do to get back to the level we want to get back to.
But there was a feeling you should have had a free just before Seamus Prendergast's point?
Definitely a free, yeah.
Which would have given you a win then?
Absolutely, yeah.
You must have been happy at Alan's contribution all through those first half.
Gary Fife was excellent, yeah. Great contribution. Very good debut to Boo, and you know, he's a very promising player, and very good player for him today.
He went forward in the first half, seemed to settle to
it. Yeah, every chance he got, he seemed to trouble Waterford, but you know, a lot of our players I wouldn't say are happy with their overall displays, and it's something that we'd obviously have to improve on if we're to be anywhere near contenders.
Are you annoyed after that performance?
Sorry?
Are you annoyed?
I wouldn't say I'm annoyed, because I think the players show great character, and you know, they're 9 points down. I'm not annoyed at all. Just I'd say a lot of the players themselves wouldn't be happy with their displays, and I'd be looking for a much better display from a lot of players next day.
Does that make life easier for you in terms of training for the next 2 weeks,
not really. I mean, we've been playing this way a bit since right through the league, and we haven't got that spark back that I felt we had times last year, so that's something we're just trying to get back to.
Is it a byproduct of being in Division 2 though, you know, that was the pace a bit slower, and then do you think this might bring you on?
It's a relevant question. I was asked that on TV a while ago, and I just feel that it's hard to know. I mean, we've had a good break since we played Tipperary in the semi-final, our quarter final of the league here. And that day we were the same, very sluggish, but we got going towards the end. And today we just seemed not to get into the pitch again quick enough as we'd like.
And Patrick Horgan, when he moved out to the half forward line,
a lot of our players in the forward line in particular found it hard to get into the game. Apart from Alan Callaghan in the first half, you'd say that a lot of players weren't playing as well as they'd like, and we want to get Pat obviously involved in the game, and he had a great contribution in the second half, in fairness to him.
So there's rumours a couple of players are carrying injuries, Patrick Crowe and Seamus Harley, they both, by their own high standards, didn't play to their very best.
Yeah, they both have had niggling things, but nothing that would in any way question whether they could start or not. There was no question of that, in fairness. So the lads weren't making any excuses, and I'm not making any excuses either.
The replay's not for 2 weeks.
I believe so, yeah.
Would you prefer it was next weekend?
I would, really, because would the winners have to play clear a week later, which is tough going. So, look, that's the way it is now. You pay for your misperformance.
Did
a lot in the second half, yeah. A lot of all our backs improved. I thought Mark Ellis, in fairness, was his first game at centre back for Cork, a great game. Delighted for him. I thought all the half back then, in fairness, Lock on, it was excellent, and Christopher Joyce, best game I saw in years from him. So, from that point of view,
Football's
up to the mark, and have a lot better, yeah, exactly.
Chemley's interception was very crucial.
Yeah, it was crucial interception. Yeah, Aidan Walsh got back and made a kind of a block as well on the tackle and the ball. So, overall, from that point of view, we got a break that thing. But I think we could have had a goal the other end just as easily. You know, so those things come and go.
You were beginning to mount a comeback, and then they got the goal in the second half.
They were 9 points, is a big lead. I don't care what the wind is like, it was a good breeze, but it was a significant lead. And I think that's one thing about our team. We always seem to show great character, in fairness. And I'd expect that from the lads, in fairness, but they do themselves. But by their own high standards, a good few of the players, I'd say, wouldn't be overall happy with their display today.
We asked Anthony about momentum you're going into the replay, and he said it's something, you know, that doesn't really mean a lot. But do you think that maybe Walt would be a little deflated?
I only look from Cork's point of view, I suppose, but I mean, if you were looking at it from Waterford's point of view, you'd have to say they came into the game very much underdogs and performed brilliantly. I mean, they did, I presume, pleased with the display they gave. We're not, but they might feel they should have won. So, you know, it's whatever way you take all of it. No, it's whoever improves from it.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's new Red FM, and that is Jimmy Barry Murphy talking afterwards there to the assembled media, including our man Mark Dynan at Simple Stadium. A disappointing performance from Cork in the first half, much improved in the second. They'll have to do it all over again Sunday, June 8th in Simple Stadium is when that has been fixed for. Now we're going to hear from our goalkeeper Anthony Nash also speaking after today's game.
It was a game two halves really, like, wasn't it? They definitely outworked us in the first half and played very well. Like, we didn't play well at all throughout the 17. I suppose you could say we're lucky to get out of jail really. Like, we had a few good goal chances and didn't take them, and first championship game, you never really know what's going to happen. Our guys fought well, when they got the goal, could have very easily dropped the heads and decided, look, that was it, and be looking at the back door. But I suppose in fairness to the lads, would feel it dug in. We were lucky and glad to be back for a second crack at it really. Like,
how significant was the wind?
I suppose it was for Puck. It was there, like, to kind of hang into the wind, like, and it allows the other half back line to maybe attack it and stuff like that. So, like, I suppose you kind of have if you can kind of stop it. And we caught a few eight and caught a few great balls in the second half there, like, and in the first half there, Kevin Moore and Brick Walsh seemed to be getting a bit on top, under the Puck. So look, you'd hope the next day would be a sunny day, no wind, and let the hurling win, like, I suppose. But look, I suppose we're just lucky, like, it's just reflecting straight after the game, it's kind of hard. Well, you have to sit down and look at the mistakes we made and the mistakes I made and everyone else in the team, so, and just hopefully learn from the next day.
Would the experience be, say, of being 8 or 9 points on the Ireland final last year and coming back, is that a factor for you?
I suppose. Look, I suppose every team, especially with the wind, like, when you get a goal in, it kind of gives you a sting in the arm and kind of get you going as well. But, like, unfortunately, we're finding ourselves in those situations an awful lot. Like, we're giving teams leads and deciding, right, we'll fight, and come out and win. But, like, it's very hard to bet against top into county teams. And as I said, we were lucky today, And, like, what? Look, Jesus, like, it's grand for me to stand here and say, Waterford were fantastic. Like, people are, there's the talk about injuries, this, that, and the other. Like, every team that Waterford put out, doesn't matter what 15 are against Cork, it just seems to be a cracking game, one way or the other. Like, and, I suppose today ended up in the draw. Like, but it's always a cracking game, win or lose, like, from either side. But and I presume, is it 2 weeks, is it, or is it 2 weeks? 2 weeks, so 2 weeks will probably be no different really, like, and like, look, we just have to go and learn, just sit down and kind of see where we went wrong and stuff. And I suppose we were carried a bit of the form from the league into it as well in the first half, like, which shouldn't help either. Like, we're probably a bit slow and a bit lax, but they put us under fierce pressure, like, and we were clearing the ball, there was 3 or 4 of them in our faces, as Waterford do every time you go and play against them. So look, all I'd say is just head down, dig in and just maybe learn a bit more than hopefully Waterford the next day and improving it.
What were the instructions at half time, sir?
Sorry?
What were the instructions at half time, sir?
There's no instructions, like, really, like, just the way, just keep, like, I suppose every team is a game plan, like, you're kind of trying to hold to the game plan, like, and what you're trying to do is stick with it. And I suppose we didn't do it in the first half, like, and just kind of stick to it in the second half. And as I said, the wind was a big factor, like, so it kind of opened up the game for us in the second half a bit. And, like, we created opportunities that we didn't in the first, and thankfully we took the points, and unfortunately we didn't take the goals, like, we got one, like, but, we probably had other chances that we could have taken and stuff, but look, that's it. And as I said, learn from next day.
As much as you were guarding against them, all the talk about them missing lines from injury and having a few goes in, was there any complacency?
No, there was that. And, like, people are going to say we were complacent. It's not that at all. We just didn't get going. Simple as that. We just didn't get going, like, for some reason, unfortunately. Like, and there's no complacency ever for Cork. Like, Jesus Christ, like, what have we won? with 7 All-Irelands going in, in each one of our pockets. Like, we've no All-Ireland medal, we've no Munster medal, so God, we're never going in complacent in the games. We see ourselves going in as underdogs every time, like, so it'll be the same next day, but there's absolutely no complacency. Like, and look, listen, as I said, if we had injuries last year and we carried on and got new fellas onto the panel, Seamus Harran, he benefited from injuries last year, and look at him now, and you look at other fellas, also Waterford will be the same. They'll get new fellas that came in and probably did today, like, and to show that they're well able to hurl, like, as always.
If having played in Division 1B was a disadvantage in terms of the pace, you'd imagine that game should bring you on and off.
I wouldn't say the pace. I wouldn't blame the Division 1B for it. I think it was just the pace we hurled ourselves. I don't think, like, it's not that you're, geez, if you're going up playing against Leash, Antrim, Limerick, Wexford and Offaly, that doesn't mean you lower your pace. That's nothing to do with it. Like, and there's an awful perception out there about that as well. Just, we didn't hurl well in the league, and we seem to just carry the truth today. And I suppose we just have to get the heads up and just maybe improve it in 2 weeks. And look, we got a good lesson today. Like, geez, we were out hurled and outworked from the majority of the game and just pulled ourselves out of it. So look, that's being the honest truth.
What found it wrong with you?
The goal, really, I suppose, kind of got a kind of a kickstart back into it as well. Like, if we didn't get a goal, we maybe would have struggled to get a few more points. Like, but I suppose new Hoggy's point in as well out in the sideline there was a fantastic score, and Aidan's point as well, the catch and score, and, like, you kind of look at things like that. But, like, I suppose when you look, like, when you do look at it, there's no individual moment really. It's just when you start to get a run in the team and you start winning breaks and stuff like that, which we started to do. So we kind of got on top. But like, if you were to pick one moment really, like, I suppose it was the goal for us that really kind of, even though it was a scrambled work goal, it just went in and kind of gave us a shot in the arm.
And after
they got
the goal,
it really looked kind of. Yeah, it did, of course. Like, I don't know what we're doing. That's 8 points or something, or something along those lines. And that's all.
Do you think the momentum is with you now going into the replay?
No. There never is. Like this again, no, is another thing out there. Oh, we came back and we're going to win the next day. Like, what, we're going to come out, they're going to hurl hard again, hurl, you know, and we're going to have to up the pace. And like, if we met in 3 weeks' time or 5 weeks' time, or like us as Clare last year met in September, the previous game doesn't mean much. You just learn from your mistakes, really, more than anything. But like, it doesn't mean that we're going to come out and say, right, we played at 80% today, we need to go at 100%. And Waterford say they played at 90%, they need to go up to 100%. Just choose go out and hurl and try and win the ball again and try to get things going.
Anthony, how do you feel the three championship debut has shaped up saying?
Ah, Shraden got man of the match, I think, by RT, so he was obviously fantastic. Alan Cadigan was a danger every time he got the ball. Like, I suppose Mark Ellis hurled very well in the centre, hurled well, like, and I think hopefully they'll learn from it. But Damien Callaghan, who's, I suppose, a glorified debutant as well, he'd only one or two matches played for us as well, I thought they hurled well. But like, it's very difficult to kind of sit down and say, like, you know, at the moment, like as I said, like, to pick out the mistakes I made and probably made a lot of them and the other lads, and just learn from that. Like,
the Big Red Bench on Cork's new Red FM, that's Anthony Nash. They're very, very honest stuff from Nasher after today's draw with Waterford. 121 apiece, they'll have to go a second day, Cullum. First half performance today from Cork, not good. Waterford looked excellent, they looked very well organised, their forwards giving Cork an awful lot of bother, but we've seen from this Cork team in the past how they dig deep, and second half they proved just how good they are, or how good they can be, I should
Absolutely.
say, but they'll need a much bigger performance in 2 weeks' time.
They will, definitely, because Waterford opened up quite a bit of a lead, and he said Cork dug deep in the second half, put in a great performance and clawed it back and got the draw and got the replay. But I think going into the game, people kind of expected Cork might actually win it by a bit more.
Yeah, I mean, like, the talk was yesterday, in fact, we had Eamon Murphy at the Evening Echo on yesterday's show, and we were discussing that maybe like a 5 or 6 point win for Cork would be just about right, and we kind of nodded and agreed, yeah, that'd be good, yeah. But it just goes to show, championship hurling, anything can happen, and Waterford were just fired up for that game, take Cork a little bit off form. I take nothing away from Waterford, who turned in a fantastic performance, and the replay now would be Sunday, June 8th in Semple Stadium in Thurles. Fully expect Cork, though, to be a much better and improved team.
Yeah, I think they'll have seen what Waterford are about today now, and Cork will know what to expect, and hopefully Cork can go on and win in the next
one. The only thing you'd be worried about then is, I mean, like, I don't want to look past that Waterford game, but if they win that, they only have a week then to prepare for Clare in the semi-final.
Yeah.
However, the flip side to that coin is Cork will have two games under their belt at that time.
Yep.
They'll have ironed out the creases, and they'll be a much better team, and they'll be facing a Clare team who'll be going in cold with no championship games behind them. So there's the flip side to that.
That is the flip side, definitely. Cork arguments. will be full of life and be very well prepared for that, but they have to overcome Waterford first, so let's not get ahead of ourselves either.
June 8th, Semple Stadium. Just in case you're wondering or care, it's still scores between Ireland and Turkey with
I'm not sure if anyone cares.
15 minutes gone, judging by the size of the crowd in the Aviva event, nobody cares. And Hibs have been relegated from the Scottish Premiership.
That's
beaten
a big one,
today
isn't it,
by Hamilton on a scoreline of 2-0, so it finished level at 2 apiece, and they lost 4-3 in the penalties. So
Hibs are a big club, so that's a big deal, them going down. Yeah,
Hibs
definitely
will join Rangers and Hearts down there next season.
The first division is nearly better than the SPL now, isn't it?
A bit more competitive anyway. Alright, we are going to talk cycling now. In today's 15th stage of the Giro d'Italia, was won by Fabio Aru of the Astana team. Rigoberto Urán holds onto the pink jersey with Cadel Evans 63 seconds behind. From an Irish perspective, Nicholas Roach is 9th, just under 40 minutes off the pace. Philip Dignan is 55th. Joining me on the line now to discuss today's events is Brian Canty, cycling journalist with the Irish Examiner and stickybottle.com. Brian, first off, we all got very excited today when Dignan made that break with about 8k to go. He just didn't have the legs up that massive, massive mountain. Did he just move that little bit too soon, do you think?
Yeah, probably was a little bit. I sound rueful, and I am, because it was a long way to go for him to actually pull that one off. Now, it's not unusual for long solo escapes to happen like that, but what came against Philip was that the top contenders were never more than kind of 30 seconds behind him, and when the road straightens and widens up and you can see a guy dangling out there, it's a lot easier for the, you know, the riders behind to gauge their effort. Now, he put up a phenomenal effort. I mean, I think he held him from maybe 8k to about 2.6k when the speed from those behind really ramped up. But look, it's brilliant to see him so active and at the sharp end of races again, because, you know, it's been so long for Philip Dignan now to be actually sniffing around for stage wins in Grand Tours, that it's definitely, you know, it's, while it's disappointing he didn't hold on, it's definitely a good indicator that he's right where he wants to be.
And that was a very tough climb as well. I mean, like, broke a lot of cyclists today as well.
It was brutal, that's the only way of putting it. It was pretty much a pan flat stage and then a race upwards for maybe 10, 15, even longer than that. So this now is where the cream rises to the top in the Giro. It's the middle week. There is a number of difficult mountain climbs to come, but today was the kind of a stage where we saw who exactly is in contention. And even though there was 200 guys started, it's down to actually probably six at this stage who can win the race overall. So a brutal stage, one of the hardest of the race, but to see an Irishman contending up there again, like we saw Nicholas Roach yesterday in his stage, very, very good, healthy state for the Irish guys in the race.
Is there a worry now that today's stage might have taken a lot out of Philip?
Yeah, probably. And the other thing it showed is that, you know, Guidon is now definitely a contender for a stage, so he won't be given much latitude in future. You know, when guys strike out like that, you know, it's almost like the equivalent of a bicep curl that they're showing, look, I am strong and I can do this. So, I mean, he did have pedigree having won. I mean, it was all of 2009 when he won a stage of a Grand Tour. But to be back at this level, he's given people a reminder of where he's at. But certainly, you know, it's not going to stop him from having a go next week and in the days ahead. But he'll be definitely glad of the rest day tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, Fabio Aru won today's stage. Were you impressed with his ride today?
Yeah, it was really good because he came into the Giro as a kind of a backup rider for their team leader. He's riding for Team Astana and Michele Scarponi, who was their main man for the race. He actually crashed and was out of the race. Aru was kind of the second in command, and he's taken it on very well. He rode away from top guys today: Uran, Quintana, Pozzovivo, Evans, and one more. Kelderman is the other guy. So he rode away from the top guys. He rode himself back into contention. I was just watching the end of it there a while ago, and you could see what it meant to him, because they've had a tough time of it so far, the Astana team. They've a couple of guys down. He's an Italian. He's born in Sardinia. So to win a home race like that, like you could call it a home race, was a huge moment for him and his career. And I think he's now fifth at maybe 2 minutes. So he's not out of contention. So it keeps the race alive for another guy.
And Evans right on Rigoberto Urán's tail as well. Is it a straight shootout between these two guys over the next week, do you think?
I think I'm going to add Nicholas Roach's teammate into the guys who are definitely still in it. A guy, Rafael Majka, he's a Polish guy. He's wearing the white jersey, which is the jersey worn by the best young rider in the race. Right. That's under 25. Evans is now second. I think he lost a bit of time today to Urán. Like he lost a bit of time on Thursday's time trial as well, which surprised me because the time trial would be one of Evans' strong points. But to lose to Urán, lose the pink jersey, was a bit of a blow to him. And I think he suffered a bit kind of a confidence knock today as well when Urán rode away in the final couple of metres. Now, he didn't put out a huge amount of time, but this Giro will be separated by seconds, and every second counts. But he'll bounce back. There's a couple of more. There's plenty more chances. But at 37, you know, it's probably Evans' last chance to win a Grand Tour. So a lot to play for, yes.
So the romantic in you wants him to win in his last Grand Tour?
Yeah, it does actually, because I'm a big fan of Evans. When he won the Tour in 2010, he was years and years trying for it. He was on the podium, second, third, fourth, fifth. Same here at the Giro. I think Urán will have another day. He'll have plenty more days because he's probably 10, 12 years younger than Evans. And Evans is a fighter as well. And when he gets dropped, some guys just explode completely and capitulate. Whereas Evans is always just clinging on and clinging on. And I would love to see it because I think he's announced that this will be his last Grand Tour. Mm. So it'd be nice to go out with a win in this.
A rest day tomorrow. We have six stages left. Which specific stage this week will sort the men from the boys, so to speak?
The stage that's going to decide the race is Friday. It's a time trial. It's a hilly time trial. Like today's stage, it's flat for a while. It's only 26K, sorry, for Friday's time trial. But mm-hmm. it's flat, then it shoots straight up. So it's going to be less about tactics and all about legs. So I'd imagine, I think there's two mountain stages between now and then. There's two flat stages as well. So there won't be any shake-up in the flat stages. I think there'll be a couple of seconds here and there between the first and maybe fifth in those mountain stages. But the time trial on Friday is going to decide the 26K. Very, very hard. Saturday then, generally guys hold on. And Sunday is always a kind of ceremonial ride into the finish, which is the next Sunday in Trieste. But there's a bit to play for. I think there's an Irish stage win this week. I really do. I think Roach was unlucky yesterday. He was fifth. He's showing real aggression. And Dyglin as well underlined his class today. So it's an exciting week for Irish from their perspective and from the race itself.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Now, moving just a little bit closer to home, and the on-post Ross finishing today. Clements Frankhauser winning the Ross. Was it a good Ross for the Irish overall?
It was, actually, yeah. And I was up there all week. And, you know, there's an argument every year I go to the race that, this eight-day race is far beyond the county rider. The county rider being the average 9-to-5 working guy who enters the race against, some of the most promising talent in the world. And this year, again, there was teams from New Zealand, Australia, America, mainland Europe, the traditions, the traditional heartland of cycling. But the Irish guys, every single day, they put it up to them. Was there an Irish stage winner? Let me think. No, there wasn't, but there was the best Irish stage finisher was Sean Downey. He was riding for the on-post chain reaction team, a Belgian-based Irish team. He was sixth. He was very unlucky not to win a stage. But the county guys really got stuck in, and they were in a lot of the main moves. They were very aggressive. Like the Giro, it was a very dangerous race. A lot of crashes, a lot of sickness. There was 176 started, 125 finished. So a huge attrition rate. You never like to see that. But a very exciting race. It went right down to the wire. It was won today, as you said, by an Austrian, Clemens Frankhauser, by 25 seconds. But I think maybe only 50 seconds separated first to seventh. So it was a very... an exciting race, and one that I'm very sad to see the backup, actually.
Excellent stuff. Brian, thanks as always for your time.
Pleasure. Thanks, guys.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's new Red FM, and that is Brian Canty there, cycling journalist with the Irish Examiner and StickyBottle.com, discussing today's action at the Giro d'Italia and the on post Ross. We'll have Brian on next week to wrap up all the action from the Giro. Right, just back to Semple Stadium briefly. Going to hear from Alan Callaghan, who had an absolutely fantastic game in the senior debut.
I suppose, look, you can look at it in two ways, really. You can say Cork were lucky or we were unlucky, So, look, thankfully we got to the draw, And Waterford were a great side there, and it just showed in the first half and second half how good they were. But thankfully, we had a proper passion there in the second half, and we kept fighting. And luckily, we came away at the draw. But we know, look, we have a lot of things to work on within the 2 weeks, so we'll regroup now and see what happens.
And to be 6 points down at half time, what was the message at the break?
I suppose, there's a lot of experience in that dressing room during the last couple of years, and we knew, if we kept plugging away, keep taking the points, and like I said, it was a strong win there. People might realise it, but I just showed there in the first half and kind of Waterford as well. But thankfully, we got over the line. But like I said, we have a lot of things to work on within 2 weeks.
And what was today like for yourself, Alan, on your senior championship debut?
Yeah, obviously, it's great that the lads gave me opportunity, Jimmy and the lads, but thankfully, it came all right. Some of the lads inside there were my situation a couple of years ago, so they had a couple of wise words to say to me, but thankfully we went okay. But it's not about me really, it's about the team and getting the draw. So we're delighted to get the draw, obviously, but like I said, it would have been nice to win, but sure, we look forward now to doing this stuff.
You must have been very pleased with your own performance today, though.
Yeah, there's a good ball coming in, it makes it easier for me inside in the full forward, and me, Shamey and Hoggy inside, if the ball's coming into us, we can just, it's easy for us, so it's fellas out the field to do all the hard work, and thankfully it went okay for me.
And to be 9 points down at one stage in the second half, to fight back, it shows a character on this side.
Yeah, absolutely. Last year, it just shows that Cork never dead and buried, and we showed that there today. But like I said, Waterford are a great side, there's talks coming into the Waterford written off, but we knew ourselves, Waterford are a great side, anytime they meet Cork championship hurling, it's unbelievable, so we'll regroup now next week and see what happens.
Now, is there any point in the game where you thought you were starting to get back into it?
Yeah, I suppose, like I said, we hit a purple patch there maybe with about 15-20 minutes to go, and we kept plugging away, and kind of Waterford were doing the same, and won a couple of frees, and thankfully Hoggy put them over, so we're just delighted to get the draw.
I think he has well 5 unanswered points at one stage in the second half.
Yeah, it just shows the team ethic that we have and the determination and the will to win. So we look forward to 2 weeks time now again.
And the supporters seem to get behind you as well, is it really seem to lift the team?
Yeah, obviously, the support there, Cork support is unbelievable. It's like a 16 man anytime Cork are playing Waterford and championship hurling, they draw a big crowd, so thankfully the crowd was there today and they drove us on in the end.
And do you think any team has momentum now going into the replay?
No, I think Waterford might think they're unlucky or we might think we're unlucky, but I think it's 50-50 for the next day, and we'll see what happens.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's new Red FM, and that is Alan Callaghan there speaking to our reporter Mark Dynan, who covered today's action for us in Thurles.
Big Red Bench. Saturday and Sunday from 6 p.m. Cork's new Red FM.
You're listening to the Big Red Bench. Rory and Colm here with you until 7 p.m. this evening. Turkey have gone a goal up on Ireland.
Great. Don't think it matters too much, but yeah.
Your reaction kind of says it all there.
It does, like, really, doesn't it, Jeff? I don't think anybody cares about these end of season friendlies, to be honest. Hopefully Ireland can win, but it's not a big deal.
Right, we're going to talk boxing, and after an 11-month layoff, Cork boxer Gary Spike O'Sullivan returns to action on Thursday week. The Mahon native heads to Boston to fight Jose Medina on the 5th of June. And the former WBO middleweight champion calling to me earlier on today to look ahead to the fight.
Rory, training my hard, feeling good shape now. You know, it's been a tough, long camp, longer than usual, you know, because it's going to be my first time in the ring. When I get in the ring on June 5th, my first time back in the ring in 11 months. So it's been a long camp getting ready, getting as much sparring as possible to make sure I be sharp for the fight.
Because your last couple of fights, you haven't had that much notice. You kind of took them in short notice. You've had like 4-week training camp, so this must be a massive advantage for you heading into this fight.
It is definitely an advantage. Yeah, I've been sparring away for the last 3 months now preparing for this fight. You know, it was good notice, so I should be at the races and be good and sharp for the fight.
Your last fight against Billy Joe Saunders, we spoke afterwards, said you wanted to get more active in the ring and kind of get a fight every 2-3 months maybe. How frustrating has it been sitting on the sidelines for the last 11?
Well, it's been very frustrating, yeah. The contract expired with Frank Warren, so, you know, I'm kind of glad in a way because, you know, I did get some big fights with him, but they were just all too spread out for me, for my liking. So I'm gone with Murphy Promotions now in the USA, and my first fight is on the Golden Boy Promotions card on June 5th, and I promise to keep me more active than I have been with Frank Warren. So hopefully that'll be the case.
So are all your fights going to be in the States now? Or can you fight in Ireland, or is it an exclusive kind of deal?
Well, I'm not 100% sure exactly what way it's going to work out. They've given me like 2-fight trial, so they want to see what I've got. So this particular fight now, I'm fighting a Mexican guy, Jose Medina. He's a good fighter. He's had a draw with the world champion, you know, and it's going to be a Mexican against an Irishman. I think they're expecting a bit of a bloodbath, and you know, it's going to be a slugfest. But yeah, so I just got to show them what I got in this fight and see where we go from there.
It's been hard to find footage on him heading into the fight, hasn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure how many fights he had, 30-odd fights. I've got to see 4 of them. He looks quite good. He looks like a busy fighter. Good, he's good. I'm looking forward to fighting him, you know. I think he'll suit me.
What's the training camp been like this time? Have you changed anything around from previous camps?
Done a bit more strength work, a bit more strength and conditioning. I've had longer to come into it, you know. I've had like 3 months to come in and do it, so I think I'm definitely stronger than I ever was before, for sure, because it takes time to build up with strength work. You can't just build up really quickly when I've got short notice for fights previously. But this time I've had a long time, so you know, my amount of weight I can lift and all that is at its highest ever.
So you'll be hitting a lot harder heading into this fight?
I think so, yeah. I think that's kind of resulting like that as well, inspiring her to, you know, break a few guys' noses and stuff like that. So, yeah.
And how has the sparring been gone? I mean, I can imagine it's been tough the last couple of weeks.
It's been very tough, yeah. You know, sparring 7 or 8 guys in a week, plus I'd limit your other training is no joke, you know, but hard work pays off, and That's what I'm doing at the moment.
So we're just over a week and a half away from the fight. I mean, like, what's your schedule like now, training wise, for the next week?
I'm going to finish off the sparring this week. Just watching the weight, managing the weight. I'm pretty good on the weight now, so
you don't have much to cut or anything, yeah?
No, I don't have much to cut at all. You know, I'm coming in at a catch weight this time. I'm just, for the first time, above the middleweight division. It's going to be just below the super middleweight, halfway between. It's going to be 164 pounds 11 stone, yeah. 10. You know, so.
So you don't have that training weight cut to worry about?
No, so I feel quite strong, and you know, I'm close to the weight and I'm feeling good.
Yeah, excellent stuff. When are you heading off to the States?
Monday week. I'm going to leave it quiet there.
Yeah.
Because I've been away from the family a lot as well.
Yeah.
Training camp above in Dublin, and you know, I'm going to leave it as late as possible to go out.
And are you going to be able to train over there? Has Pascal started the gym for you to train just before the fight?
Yeah, that won't be a problem. Pascal, well, I'm promoted by company in Boston now, you know, and Pascal lived in the States for 15 years with his brother Steve, so
he knows the scene over.
Exactly, yeah. So
yeah, it's going to be a fantastic fight. I mean, like, as you know yourself, the Irish community in Boston is massive, so seeing an Irish fighter on the card is going to be a massive boost for you.
Definitely, yeah. It's sold out already, I believe, you know, because I've had people on Twitter there asking me from the States. It's funny. Can I get tickets? But I tell them I'm not over there yet and I don't know anything about tickets, but they're telling me that they're finding hard to get tickets, you know, so it's I'm looking forward to it.
It's on TV over there as well, so hopefully we might be able to catch it over here.
Fox Sports, yes.
Yeah.
So
yeah, fantastic, right?
My friend Stephen Norman now is coming over as well, and he's going to be sparring with the world champion Fortuna over there. Fortuna is based in Boston now as well, so we'll be, I'm not sure Jim will go on with training, but there's going to be some good sparring over there as well, so it'd be great.
How many rounds are you fighting?
Six. It's my shortest fight in a long time.
Yeah.
You know, but I've been training for high intensity, so it's going to be action from the world go, and you know, I've got to put the pressure on him for the six rounds.
You said, like, this deal is like a two fight trial. Do you find, like, are you under pressure to go and put on a performance and show these guys exactly what you can do next week?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
I think that I need to go out there and put on a good performance. You know, it is a two fight trial, and you know, it's a tough fight, and I've trained hard and I plan on putting on a good performance. You know, I've got a new shorts for the fight. I've got the slogan "War" across the waistband, and that's what I intend to do. Go to war with them, you know, and entertain the fans in America. You know, that's they like a good fight, you know, and I think it has the ingredients to be a good fight, being a Mexican against an Irishman, as I say, and two come forward fighters, you know, with good punch power. It's going to be interesting.
You're going to have the Shamrock shaving to the head?
No.
You're looking pretty bald today, so it'll be a bit of a struggle, lad.
I got had a wet shave yesterday and goatee and kind of going with a Marvin Hagler look for this fight.
Yes, looking, you look like Hagler, alright,
the white Marvin Hagler, right? You know, he used to fight out of Brockton, Massachusetts, so I think I want to try and take over from him now and bring the world championship to Boston. You know, if I be promoted out there, so
yeah,
that'll be good.
Is Pascal heading over with you for the fight as well?
Oh yeah,
yeah. So he's in your corner, so you're well used to it. You're not.
No.
You don't have a different team over there, and
no, like no, that. No. He's like the we go everywhere together. Like he's like the sheep, you know.
So wherever you go, he follows, kind of thing. Like.
Exactly.
What other fights are on the card on the night? Any big fights?
There was a few fights, right? A few championship fights. I haven't paid particular attention to it. I've just been kind of concentrating on my own thing, and you know, I kind of always do that anyway. Mm. Unless sometimes you see we. I haven't been to any press conferences over there yet, so I haven't been paying too much attention, just paying attention to my own opponent and focusing on my own strengths. And
happy days. Your last fight against Billy Joe Saunders, you didn't really get to show exactly what you can do. I mean, like, do you feel you're at your best now and you feel like you're going to put on a show next week?
Yeah, it was a terrible performance for me. I wouldn't say
terrible. I mean, like, Billy Joe's a very good fighter.
He's a very good fighter, yeah. He's ranked number one in the world now as well, you know. Yeah. I suppose it's not a bad thing, people would think, being beaten by the number one fighter in the world, but you know, I want to be the number one fighter in the world, and I'd never be happy with a loss. And I still, you know, I'm very upset still about it 10 months on. You know, it still eats at me, and something I'd like to get avenged sometime, you know, in the future.
It was your first professional loss as well, so I mean, like, this is the first time you've had to deal with a loss going into a fight.
That's true, yeah.
Does that kind of change your mentality, thinking? Is it kind of like, people always say you learn more from a loss than a win. Is that true in this case?
Absolutely, Rory, yeah. I didn't enjoy the defeat at all, to say the least, but I think it has actually definitely made me a better fighter as regards my mindset and stuff, and I had to address the problems where I went wrong. Is generally when you win fights, you don't really go back and analyse too much. You just kind of are celebrating, you know, bask in the glory of it, I suppose.
But was it a case of like kind of just sitting down watching the tape of Pascal, or what was it, or...?
Yeah, well, I sat there, I watched the fight, yeah, and he watched the ones I found very hard, difficult to watch. Oh, gee, cut me up, you know. But I've thought about it nearly every day since then, and, you know, it's tough to take, you know. But, you know, I'd address all the problems where I went wrong, and I think, you know, that I don't want to make those problems again. Like, you know, I've done it with my psychologist and with Pascal and the rest of the team, and, you know, it's just something that I don't intend to do again, and I definitely don't want to taste defeat again.
So would getting a win next week kind of just push that out of your mind completely? Would it kind of put you in a better headspace, really, so to speak?
Oh God, I don't know. I don't really know. You know, I'm not sure, but I'd be glad to get back to winning ways for sure. But I can't really answer that question until after the fight because it's still on my mind. That loss, you know, I hate losing. Hate it. And, you know, I think about it a lot.
So this fight with Jose Medina, tell me how it's going to go down.
Well, I think I think and I hope that I don't have to go looking for him. You know, I got a lot of power. I find a lot of guys when I hit him, you know, formally, that they have come and fought with other guys, but when they feel my power, they start to run. Then
they just turtle up and just kind of back off.
And I don't like that. Then it's right to move around and get on their bike and try and pick you off and run. I don't really enjoy that a lot. Yeah. I find it quite boring, actually. Yeah. The ring, you know, it nearly puts me to sleep.
When they got you fight you, like, you don't want to run for 6 rounds.
Exactly. Right? Kind of put, you nearly lose your concentration. That's what I feel anyway. If you want to go a sore fence, go a sore fence. And I come to fight. I'm a boxer. I want to fight. I want to tear up in the ring, you know, I want to scrap. Yeah, so I hope that he comes to fight like he usually does, and the plan then is just to be the fitter and better man, sharper man on the night, and take the victory.
And get that right hand, put him down on the canvas.
Exactly, right or left, it doesn't matter.
Spike, thanks very much for calling in, man. As always, we're really looking forward to watching you fight, and looking forward to seeing you get that win in America. Hopefully, now we can watch it as well. So we'll keep an eye out for the listings and stuff online, and we'll post it up on our Red FM Facebook and Twitter page. Spike, thanks very much for calling in.
Thanks very much, Rory. My pleasure. I'll see you when I get back.
You certainly will. Anyone you want to thank actually before you?
I suppose, you know, I'll be here for the night thanking everybody. I suppose Conal Thomas, Tree Services, like, you know, he's sponsored my training camp, and, you know, he's gone out to the States to watch the fight as well with his wife and his daughter, you know, and my mum, my girlfriend, my kids, you know, Pascal, all the team.
Yeah.
You know, actually, all my sparring partners as well, because
God love them.
They've had a hard job, but they've given me from Ray Wallace as well, so thanks all of them for helping me prepare as well. You know, and Brian Guy, my strength and condition trainer, and yeah, you know, Alan Harry, my psychologist, and all the team, and yourself, and everyone to support me in Cork, and everyone on Twitter, Facebook. Thank you all. Thank you.
Thanks, Jam. Thanks, Colin.
Thanks, Rory.
Big Red Bench on Cork's new Red FM, and that is Spike O'Sullivan there as he gets ready to return to action. He fights in Boston Thursday week against Jose Medina. Best of luck to him. Still 1-0 to Turkey. Not that anyone cares, but in news that everyone else will care about.
Right.
Kanye West and Kim Kardashian.
I was going to break this massive news to you. They have landed apparently in a private jet at Cork Airport. This is great sporting information here on the Big Red Bench. Kanye West and Kim Kardashian, yeah, they're on the way back from their wedding, and this is part of their honeymoon in Cork. And the rumour has it they're off to Castle Martyr. More on the Red FM Facebook page if you want to have a look.
They'll be hitting up some famous sites in Cork, so later on.
Absolutely. You might find them around Shandon. You might find them in Havana Browns tonight or somewhere.
Inside in a fountain at about 3 in the morning.
Possibly, yeah.
Never know. Right, we're going to talk football. A massive night for Douglas Hall tomorrow. The Munster Senior League side take on Limerick in the Munster Senior Cup final. That's in Turner's Cross with a 7:30 start. Hall stars Chris Fox and Dave Hackett call in to me for a chat about the game.
David Hackett, left back.
Chris Fox, centre mid.
It's a big accomplishment for a club like Douglas Hall now to get to this final. You know, we've beaten Cork City and Cove, two Aircom League teams. So it's been big. Like, there's no pressure on us really to win it. So. There's been a massive buzz, especially we voided relegation last weekend, so it's the confidence is high, you know, in the last couple of weeks. So,
yeah, Chris, talk to me about your Munster Senior League campaign.
Munster Senior League campaign, it was the start of the season that actually left us down, but yeah, the second part of the season it really picked up. I think we've only been beaten twice in the last 12 games, so there's a good buzz among the players and all that.
And what was the change in the latter half of the season? Was it just that you clicked together?
I think the turning point was actually when we beat Cove 2-0. The season turned from there, and everyone got the belief that we could actually push on in the league, and the runs we're having in the cups now was really coming to
Dave, where did you finish in the league?
We ended up actually finishing 5th, which is crazy.
Solid mid-table.
Yeah. On the last day of the season, there was 1 of 4 could have went down, so we won our last game thankfully, and we ended up finishing 5th. So we had a brilliant second half of the season, but as Chris was saying there, just the start of the season, we just weren't playing well at all. But in fairness, like, the manager stuck by us now, yeah, and you know, a lot of work has gone in there in the last 12 months up there, so and hopefully we'll pay dividends now on Monday night.
And Chris, I can't imagine at the start of the season the Munster Senior Cup would have been high on your list of priorities, would it?
Oh no, we entered it with not much expectation really. With the draw we got Cove, and we actually believed that we could beat Cove at the time. Mm-hmm. And then to come up against City was a big challenge for us, and we actually went 1-0, and to beat them we now believe we can go on and win it.
Have you seen much of Limerick this season so far, Dave?
Not much now, to be honest, but I just know they had a good win now last night against St Pat, so they'll be very difficult to beat. Obviously they'll be, you know, a big favourite. But no, as Chris was saying there, no, we believe we can beat them now after beating City especially.
And Chris, playing at Turner's Cross as well must be a massive boost for you.
Oh, it's a big boost to be playing in our own hometown really, and hopefully the sport will come out for us.
Do you have much experience playing in Turner's Cross?
We played City there actually, and we beat them 3-1, and we actually have another cup final next week.
Yeah.
So it'll be a big advantage for us.
So Dave, essentially you're a cup team sort of season here.
Yeah, for the second half of the season, it could be fair to say that now, all right. But like the Beamish Cup as well would be a big one for us now on Tuesday week. But it's just a massive achievement to get to the Munster final. And you know, we've always done well in the cup competitions in the past. So hopefully now, like this win now would be absolutely massive for the club and everyone involved with it.
Yeah, I'm open to correction this, but I don't think the Munster Senior League Club has ever won the Munster Senior Cup.
I'm not too sure. I think Passage were in the final or a couple of years ago.
Yeah, Avondale were in the final last year.
And Avondale got beaten last year as well, yeah. So, yeah, this would be a first. It would be absolutely huge, you know, for everyone involved.
And Chris, being underdogs as well, I suppose, it kind of suits you heading into a game like this, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, because there's no pressure on us as such, and that's the way we went into the last two games, and it's so fair. So with no pressure, it leaves us play, and no one expects us to win. But we still believe we can win.
Mm. And Dave, what kind of football have you been playing this season?
We've been playing good football now. With the management team that we've involved this year, they just like us to go up and express ourselves on the pitch. And it shows. We play on the AstroTurf as well, which is good for good football has been played in it this year. So, no, they let us go up and play. They believe in us, and hopefully now we'll repay them now in the next week.
So many from the club, I can imagine there's going to be a massive crowd heading down.
Hopefully, yeah. We were kind of hoping it would be at a weekend. Maybe there might be more people at it. But no, Monday night, no. Hopefully, it should be a big crowd down the cross to support us.
And everything is crashed to get the weather for it as well. Chris, talk to me about the Douglas Hall players and who we should be looking out for on Monday.
Well, we have a very strong squad now at the moment. But we have savage pace going forward with the likes of Derek Varian. And then Dekey O'Connell up top is very good as well. And at the back, we have Chucky and Joe Keane, who have been solid all year. So I'd say Derek Varian could be key, as long, along with Dekey O'Connell.
Dave, building up to a game like this, I mean, like, is it hard to kind of keep a lid on it in training because you just want to get out into the pitch and kind of get out there?
Yeah, it is the build up, right? You can be kind of just wanting to get out of the pitch as fast as possible, but no, it's good. We need to sit back and enjoy because we don't get to the final of these things often. So this last week now has been really good now here, and all the support that's been around Douglas as well, and even, you know, the interview here we're doing ourselves. So it is good. We just want to play the match now at this stage, but the last week has been very good now, the build up in that.
Yeah, I'd imagine the excitement is kind of reaching fever pitch at the moment.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
And so, I mean, like, do you get nervous heading into games like this?
You do a small bit, but I think the nerves for these big games, they're good. It's more kind of excitement nerves as well, you know. But you would get nervous before, but as soon as you step out on the pitch and you see all the support in the game that you're actually about to play, it all goes away. Like,
something looking forward to. Chris, tell me, what has to go right for you to win a Monday?
I think it's attitude, really. Once we get a nice start to the game, I think if we keep it tight for the first 20 minutes, I think we're in with a great chance of winning the game.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's new Red FM. That's Chris Fox and Dave Hackett of Douglas Hall. Best of luck to Hall tomorrow in the Munster Senior Cup final. That's in Turner's Cross at a 7:30 start. If you can get down there to support the lads and give them the support against Limerick, that'd be great. 7:30 in Turner's Cross tomorrow. Best of luck to Douglas Hall. Now we're going to look back on the Champions League final. The cruel night for Atletico Madrid, 90 seconds away from being Champions League winners. They lost 4-1 to Real Madrid after the end of extra time. I spoke to Spanish-based football journalist Joseph Sexton about the game earlier on today.
I think probably, you know, over the course of the 120 minutes, you'd have to say they were the better team. Certainly, Diego Simeone conceded that they were the better team from halftime onwards. I think, you know, it was very fortunate the way they managed to get the equaliser deep in stoppage time, but after that, there was really only going to be one winner.
Just looking at the game as a whole, I mean, like, Atletico did a very good job of frustrating Real, who looked a bit devoid of ideas throughout the 90 minutes.
Yeah, I think so. I think there you can see the absence of Xabi Alonso was you know, a major issue for them. I think also we could perhaps see that Ronaldo was not quite at full fitness, and he struggled to make an impact on the game.
And just looking at the goal that Atletico scored, Iker Casillas won't like watching that back on the replays.
I don't think so. It's, you know, all the talk going into this game is that this is his competition. This is the one that he's bound up. But of course, he came into the side in 2000 as an 18-year-old, and you know, was superb in their run to winning the competition. But you know, the you could see when he was talking to Marcel afterwards that he was pleased, you know, that his teammates had gotten him out of jail after that error.
Yeah, you could see all right after Ramos got the goal. He went up and gave him a big kiss while the game was still going on. So massive relief from him, because that's not the way he would have wanted to be remembered.
No, absolutely not. You know, it was a bad mistake. Like you have to say that. But you know, he's on the winning side again. He's a man who just doesn't like losing finals, and his record in finals is exceptional.
Mm. When it went into extra time last night, it looked to me that Atletico were just playing for penalties. They looked absolutely spent.
Yeah, their legs were gone. I think you know, the picking Diego Costa and then having to make the substitution early on, that caused them issues with fatigue. But also, you have to look at the season as a whole. They've played with a, you know, they've largely stuck with the same starting 11. They've played over 60 games, and you know, this was always going to be an issue if the game was going to drag on. They did well to keep it up for the 90 minutes, but after that, they were really spent.
And that cost decision was a massive, massive gamble, considering the severity of his injury. We've been hearing all these stories about horse placenta treatments and stuff like that to get him fit. But it was still a massive surprise to see him on the team sheet, wasn't it?
It was, and I suppose the only good thing we can say about this is that he didn't exacerbate the injury. It's not going to affect his World Cup, hopefully. But I suppose the issue then is when you bring in someone like Adrian, he's only got one league goal to his name this season, so you can see why they were desperate to let Costa play if he could. And of course, the day before, Costa was training and moving quite well, but on the night itself, he just wasn't there.
How much pressure was there on Real Madrid last night to complete La Decima?
The pressure was enormous. They got themselves into a really good position in the league campaign with about five or six games to go. They were the form side. They were the side with momentum, and they just kind of threw that away around the time that they got through to the final after beating Bayern Munich. So they, you know, this was kind of the season-defining moment. Some would say even it would play a part in deciding whether Ancelotti would stay on as coach. So the pressure was absolutely massive.
And when you look back at previous Real Madrid teams, the Galacticos and that era kind of thing, where does this Real Madrid team rank?
I don't think they're quite up there with the best of the best. But, you know, who's to say that this team can't go on and claim another Champions League in the next couple of years and, you know, perhaps even do what's proved beyond every other club in recent time and actually retain the competition. But, you know, it's early days yet for this team. They have a lot to prove before they can be ranked up with the best sides.
There was a lot of pressure on Gareth Bale this season, considering the massive price tag that he arrived for. How do you think he performed over the course of the season?
I think he's dealt with it very well. I think he's had the support of his teammates, and you know, he's had a, you know, an interesting mixture of confidence and humility, but he realised that he's going into the team to play second fiddle to Ronaldo. He's been very happy with that. He's certainly won Ronaldo over. Ronaldo was saying that he admires him as a player, but even more so as a man in the week leading up to the game. So he's ingratiated himself well. And, you know, once he got over his initial trouble with injuries and lack of a pre-season, he's been quite consistent throughout the season.
And last night as well, I mean, like, I know he missed a couple of chances, but he created those half chances entirely himself, and the header that he got for Real's second goal was absolutely incredible. He doesn't score many goals, but he's coming away from goal and he puts it right into the top corner. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a great header. I think he might have been haunted had they lost the had Ramos not gone on and got that equaliser, because certainly the first opportunity he had was a real golden one, and you know, he couldn't hit the target. But you know, the header was crucial. It was the goal that, you know, marked the you know, clinched the game before the other goals are running late on. So it was, you know, absolutely vital.
Joseph, does losing the Champions League final take some of the gloss off Atletico's La Liga win?
I don't think so, no. I think it's hard to put into words the achievement of them winning the league. I mean, you know, winning a cup competition is one thing, but winning over 38 league games, I mean, that's just testament, you know, and they've taken each game as it comes all season long. That's been the refrain of Simeone, but they got there in the end, and you know, getting to the Champions League final was a bonus. I'm sure they obviously would have loved to have won the competition for any number of reasons, but you know, you have to say, like, to win the league and to get to the Champions League final in the same season, it's a remarkable achievement for this side.
And speaking of Simeone, what is it that he's done right with this team?
He's just really instilled a kind of team spirit, a winner's mentality in the side. They, when he took them over, they were, you know, down in the bottom half of the table. They'd been knocked out of the cup by a third division team. The club was a joke institutionally, and he's managed to overcome that. He's managed to make every player in that squad a better player than they were when he came in, and he's dealt well with departures. I mean, in the summer he lost Radamel Falcao García, and you know, up steps Diego Costa to take his mantle. And you know, it's just a staggering achievement, really.
Is it a flash in the pan, though? How difficult is it going to be for them to replicate that next season?
It'd be difficult for them to replicate the same level of success they've had this year, but you know, the season before, although they ended up 17 points off the top, they, for about three quarters of the season, they pushed really hard in the league, and they look capable of splitting the big two. So there's form there. There's you know, this hasn't just been an achievement this season. He got them from 11th to fifth, just missing out on the Champions League in his first half season. Obviously, it's going to be interesting to see who comes and goes in the summer. I think the crucial unanswered question is whether they can keep Thibaut Courtois, because he's been central to the team. I think Costa, they'll already concede that it looks like he's on his way out.
The Big Red Bench on Cork's New Red FM. That's Spanish-based football journalist Joseph Sexton there, discussing last night's Champions League final and the La Liga season as a whole. We are out of time. Thank you very much for tuning our way this evening. Up next, we have Ashley Keenan with Green on Red. All the best in Irish music from 7 until 10 o'clock. And then from 10 o'clock, Black on Red with Stevie G. If you want to find us online, redfm.ie/sport, or you can get us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thanks to everyone who helped out with the show today. We're back next Saturday from 6 p.m. Enjoy your evening, folks. Ashley's up next.
This is a free download from Cork's New Red FM, the Big Red Bench podcast.